Well, good morning. Good to see everybody. We have quite a crowd this morning. We're glad for your presence. We have visitors in the audience. Thank you for coming our way. It's sure good to see the Alsips. Well, both sets, but the older Alsips. It's the first time I've been able to lay eyes on you. And I know so many people here know you already, but we've talked a lot through text and otherwise. And so it's sure good to lay eyes on them and know they're a part of us. It's good to have Jim in the audience this morning. I know he's hurting now for your mother. We are for you too. And of course, all the clan. I won't say any names because there was a person that forgot last week. And I don't, I'll just say we love you all and are thinking of you with your grandmother and mother. All right. If you open up your New Testaments to Ephesians, the 6th chapter, verse 1 through 4, we're going to use that as our lesson today. I'm not going to be able to get to any kind of parenting lessons. I thought maybe when I started the class, I would have some occasion to do that. So I thought that I would preach on it. It's kind of a subject I come to once a year anyway, because it's one that's needed. And we have young families in this assembly, and they are in the midst of rearing their children. And the last thing that any of us need to do is say to them, because of the terrible times in which we live, boy, I'm so glad I'm not rearing my kids now. That's really a bright place of encouragement for them. If you feel that way, just keep it to yourself. And say to them the words they need, because they have to raise their kids in this generation. And it's been done before. Don't think you're the first ones. When I think about Daniel and his three friends, think about how horrible Judah was, about the point that God was going to destroy them, carry them off into captivity. Daniel and them went in the first wave. And you think about how bad things were, how sinful God's people had become. And we're talking about God's people. We're talking about, many times when we're referencing this, we're talking about this culture out there in the world around us. And so realize that good kids can be reared in very difficult times. And Daniel and his three friends are great examples of that. These are some people that in my life, well, I'll get this going there in a minute, mean a lot. They are all Aggies, so understand that one day I'll have a bunch of you hogs up here. The people in the upper right-hand corner are Robert Harkrider's great-nephew. That's Conrad Harkrider, his wife Jessica. They have two other girls now. So that's how long ago I had this picture. Brian Blackburn's in the middle. He's a basketball coach. He coached for a while, played on the Aggie basketball, men's basketball team. And then he coached for a while in Bryan. And then that's one of four now they have. Brian and Sharon Harrington, they live in Tennessee. And I could just go down the list there. All these were college kids. And now they're mamas and daddies, and they're rearing two and three and four kids. And what a blessing they are. They all, the most of them on this screen are faithful. Some have fallen away already. They're up on that screen. But most of them are faithful, and most of them are raising their children in very difficult times. And I want you to understand that's the future. We're looking at it. I'm not the future. I'm on the tail end of things. And some of you are way more on the tail end of things than me in this audience. But they're the future. And all of you, with your little ones in this audience this morning, you're the hope. You're West Side, because the rest of us are on the way out. And what we can do is help you and instruct, but it's you that have to stand in this very difficult time, in this very difficult age. Disrespect and disobedience are tolerated way more than it should be. But it's not new. Romans 1, verse 30 was one of the lists in that great, terrible list of sins. Well, what's one of them? Disobedient to parents. Isn't that amazing? That stands out as something God would call out and have Paul put into words. I mean, there's a lot of sins that are not mentioned in that list, by the way. But that one God mentioned. Not only there, he does in 2 Timothy 3, 1 and 2. Understand this, that in the last days, which of course the period from the Pentecost on, or we understand that that's where that time period begins, there will come times of difficulty. For people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents. Again, think of all the sins that you could list, and yet in both of these lists of things that are wrong with society, here it is, disobedient to parents. Lacey Starling is a Aggie, one of the girls that we had down there, and she was a school teacher. And I always say about school teachers, you're on the front lines. You're seeing what society is putting out there. You're in a public school. You're finding out. You find it out when you have to have parent conferences and they're divorced and you have to have a conference with the dad and a conference with the mom because they can't stand to be with each other. And you have all that kind of hoopla that goes on and the turmoil in the kids' lives. Lacey Starling was a math teacher. She told her class to stop talking. It was a high school class, and so they started barking at her in class. Do you know what would have happened to me if I had even thought about doing that? Even the thought. You would not have a preacher here. That's what would have happened to me. Jessica Sherman Harkrider, that's Conrad's wife, school teacher in her day, told them to stop talking. Told a high school girl that was cussing out another girl in her class. She just came up behind her, gently put her hand on her shoulder, and the girl turned around and started cussing Jessica out. The school at least fined the girl $400 and suspended her. In my day and age, they would have paddled the hound out of her on top of it. Law and order. What happened last year in our country? Where did those people come from? I don't care what color they are. Where did they come from? I guarantee you they didn't have homes that taught them any kind of respect. Where do kids that can do that to teachers also do that to policemen? To people that are set up to, I understand we've got some policemen at times that are bad, but I'm going to tell you that's not the bulk of them. Anybody's going to say that, I'll argue with you. I'll argue with you in public and private. Most of them are there to defend us from the bad guys. Isn't that what Romans 13 says? It does. Where did they come from, those kids that were hurling frozen ice water bottles, were shooting laser lights into their eyes, were beating up people? I'm going to tell you, they didn't come from homes that taught respect and honor for those who are in authority. They came from homes that were disobedient to the parents. That's where people like that most of the time come from. I know there are exceptions. You ever thought about Jesus, the boy? Jesus, the teenager? Luke chapter 2, verse 51, 52. He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. Remember, this was after they found him in the temple. And his mother treasured up all the things that he said to them in her heart. And then it says this, Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. You see, it's not just important to grow in stature and favor with God. It's also important that you grow in stature and favor with man. Now, that's obviously people that hold right values. I think you understand that. All right, so in the passage that we're going to read, if you'll turn Ephesians 6, 1 through 4, it's a passage I'm sure many of you could quote. It says this, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So let's think about this. Two parts. Obviously, he says, here, children, are things you need to do. And then he's going to turn to fathers, and we'll talk about that. I believe that word has mothers in it too, but we'll get there and talk about that. First of all, what does he say in verse 1? Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. There are just some things, folks, that are right and wrong. They're ingrained in us. It's inside of us. There's something wrong if I stand there and watch, for instance, if I were to be in the room, watch a little kid be tortured by their parents. Sometimes you see it on TV, be burned with a cigarette lighter, or beaten. Really, and then I don't do anything to intervene. Or I watch somebody start to grab a young lady on campus or anywhere, and then you know what they're going to do to her, and I have the ability to intervene, and I just stand there and don't do anything. I mean, there are just some things inside of us that we know innately are right and wrong. And then it's codified in God's law, codified in man's law. Many times man's law, at least in Western civilization, has come from God's law in times past and has been passed down. There are just some things that innately we understand are right and other things that are viciously wrong. And it is right, he says, to all of you who are children in this audience, and that includes even those of us that may be older. I may be on the point that I am going to obey in the sense that I'm under his authority. I have my own home. I have my own life. For instance, my dad couldn't say to me, you've got to move back to Texas. And that's not, at my age, going to be something that I have to obey. You understand that when you have your own life and your own family, there is a new home that has been formed. But I owe my father and mother always, even as old as I am, respect, honor, and the duty to take care of them and aid them as much as I can in physical ways or otherwise. First of all, the reason this is right is because they gave us life. Our parents stand to us as children when we are children, as God does to all mankind. Listen to what Proverbs 23:22 says. Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she ills. There's why you respect them. It's because they came from you. Because when you were a little bit baby, you talk about the most defenseless baby of any kind that we can talk about. I mean, have you ever watched those channels that have the animals on it and those caribou herds give birth? And I mean, within just matters of minutes, that little caribou that has given birth can get up and run with the best of the herd. It has to be able to get away from the predators and move with the herd for protection. I guarantee you put a little baby, human baby, it's going to be a long time until they can protect themselves and defend themselves. Here's the reason. Here's why it's right. It's because they, just like God gave us life, we as human fathers and mothers give them life. Respecting parents is at the top of the list. The Ten Commandments begins, the first four are what man owes to God, the vertical. Then the six that come after that are what man owes to man. Guess what tops that list? What's the first one? Honor your father and your mother. Just as the first one is, remember that God is God and we owe him everything, and we're not to ever bow down before any other God. You understand the first thing that heads the man-to-man list is our parents. They brought us into this world and we owe them everything. In Proverbs, or rather 2 Kings, chapter 2, verse 23 through 24. What happens when a society loses that respect? Remember this story? Elisha is on his way up, and it says he went up there from there to Bethel. Remember, Bethel was the place that Jeroboam had placed one of the golden calves. So you can imagine, this is many years later, and how ungodly the people had become. And I think there's a good reason why it's stating to us that here's where the disrespect for Elisha, who they all know is the prophet of Jehovah. While he was going up on the way, some small boys came out of the city and jeered at him, saying, "Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head." And he turned around, and when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of the Lord. And two she-bears came out of the woods and tore 42 of those boys. So the next time y'all say anything about people lacking hair, just remember that passage. Now, you understand why. They were showing such disrespect for one who represented Almighty God, who was his mouthpiece, who was the one that told the will of God. Have you ever wondered, how is it possible? There was more than 42 boys. It says they tore 42 boys. There was a gang. How many more were there? Now, somebody says, really, this is one of those difficult passages. These are 5-6-year-old boys. No, these are not 5-6-year-old boys. You look at the Hebrew carefully. You look at where others are used. There's no way for us to know exactly, but this is more like you're thinking of a preteen. You're thinking of 12-year-olds. You're thinking somewhere in that neighborhood. All right, they're still boys. We understand that. But what if a mob of 42 plus boys came out and taunted you? Would you fear for what they could do? There's enough power in 42 of them to overpower one man, one old man like Elisha would have been. Would you worry for your safety? And you and I would be standing back looking at the story saying, where are the moms and dads? How is it possible that 42 plus young boys come out and jeer and mock a prophet of God so that he then turns to God and God listens to him? Because they're not just mocking Elisha. They're mocking God. And God heard and sent two she-bears to deal with them. You think he is not going to deal with it? Do you think he doesn't care? Do you think he watched what happened in this country last year and there ain't going to be a price to pay for that? That eventually judgment comes? We need to understand that when we're rearing our children, they're going to respect police and they're going to respect the law on the basis of how they respect us as parents or disrespect us. They're going to respect school teachers and administrators and coaches and janitors based on how they respected us as their parents. And other human beings and their possessions, those people that in St. Louis just wandered into it and said, that house, I'm going to live in that house, that one's going to be mine. And those folks came out with weapons to defend their property, and we get into some kind of ridiculous idea that somebody doesn't have a right to defend what they own. I'm going to tell you, that's a biblical concept. And when you understand that the disrespect goes deeper than just watching what those people were doing in all of these cities, it goes back to what we're talking about in this passage. That's where they came from. No matter the color of anyone's skin, that's where we come from. So what do we need to do if we're kids? We need to obey our parents because this is right. Secondly, it says it is the first commandment he does in verse 2, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with promise. Now, promises are always future. They're always looking to what's better. And it's somewhat fleshed out, I think, in verse 3, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. But what it has to do is the future's better. How is that going to be? Where do God's people come from? Where do elders and deacons originate? Where do Bible class teachers and preachers and the wives of all these men that help them along in their duties come from? Someone taught them. And most of the time it is a parent or a grandparent that does that. And any local church is only as strong as the families that make it up. Now that ought to be obvious to us. You're not going to have a strong church if you don't have strong family units. Because that's where the battle is fought. Every day. You're only here for 3 hours a week that we assemble in some way. Teach classes and so forth. Where we fight the battle is all those other hours that we live just with our parents and our families. There arose a generation after Joshua, after the elders that outlived Joshua in the blue, there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord. You know how important it is, fathers, mothers in this audience, that you have a devo of some kind with your kids every day. That you're talking about God with them, that it comes up, that you're not just leaving the Bible in the back seat of the car and then it's there next Sunday when you get in the car to come, but that it's part and parcel, the warp and the woof of your life, that they see it and they know it. How many times do you read in Joshua that this sign may be among you, that those stones that were put out on the bank and then were put out in the middle of Jordan, but the ones on the bank, it was sort of like Israel's first national park. And when you came to Gilgal and you saw those 12 stones stacked on one another, when your children ask in time to come, what do these stones mean? Then you shall tell them. And that's how it's always been. We pass our faith on. We mold and shape, and we do it by the stories that we tell from the Word of God. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 25 through 27, and when you come to the land the Lord will give you, and He has promised to keep you this service, when your children shall say about the Passover, what does this mean? Then you shall say to them, and instruct them, and teach them, and tell them. I'm sure all the little kiddos, when the bread comes by and they're not taking it, but mommy and daddy are, and they're drinking the fruit of the vine, I guarantee you they're asking you somewhere along the line, aren't they? Why can't I do that? And you're saying to them, well, you will one day. But here's why. And you explain what it means and you teach them. And that's exactly what we have to do. What do your children observe in you, by the way? Are you involved in the work of the church a lot? Some? Not at all? And what will they do when they come to their age? They will most of the time do exactly what you did. Most of the time, they will do exactly what we instructed them to do. And then thirdly, he says that it provides protection. Look at 3a, that it may go well with you. There's protection in this submission to parents. And we've already talked about that. Submitting to this authority leads to us submitting to the laws of our country, to the police, to teachers and administrators and coaches at school, and all of what builds respect in the society. God's word is filled with a lot of do not do these things. Why? Because it protects us. It protects us from destroying ourselves. And if we understand that, then we see the point of this. And then it just right along with that, that it not only may go well with you, but you may live long in the land. Now, that's not going to be true of everybody. There are people who are young and respectful, their parents, and they die early. But you understand the kind of death they're dying many times is not what he's describing. Hear, my son, and accept my words, that the years of your life may be many. Those kinds of kids that were the young people that were throwing a frozen ice water at the police and shooting laser lights into their eyeballs. Well, I tell you right now, they didn't come from the right kind of place, did they? And where are they going to end up? Where are they going to go? In Proverbs 30, verse 17, pretty powerful words. The eye that mocks a father and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by the vultures. Wow. Man. You ever seen somebody like that? Yeah. I've seen people like that. I've seen people that they never got their life together. They were a mess, and they continued to be a mess because they defied God, and they defied their parents, and they just kept on, you know, going down into drugs and going down into having sex with whoever they wanted to, and then getting some kind of dreaded disease, and it just, you know, into debt and gambling, and just everything about their life went the wrong way because they didn't hear their parents and listen to it, and it did not provide them long life. All right, the second great section of this then is instruction. And I believe it's to all parents, not just fathers. But look at verse 4. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, it says fathers. And so somebody may think, well, that's, you know, now the load is put on the fathers. Well, there is a sense in which that's going to be true because he by God is given to be the head of the home. And so the direction, the who should be guiding, but do we think that doesn't involve mothers? In both translation and common sense, both parents are involved mightily in the process of rearing children. And in the course of what naturally usually happens, the mother stays with the children when they are young and rears them up and is spending an inordinate more amount of time than a father does, especially in modern society. It may not have been so when it was an agricultural society. I can remember growing up on a farm, my dad, you were there, except we went to public school, so that took us away in modern times. But can you imagine in many ancient times, it was your parents that taught you. You were with your mom and dad all day. The same word, by the way, that translates fathers in this passage is the same one that translates parents in Hebrews chapter 11:23 when it talks about Moses' parents. Same word that translates fathers here is translated parents there. So I believe it's more than fathers. I believe it's involving the idea of the mother and dad are to rear the children. First of all, he says to them in verse 4a, do not discourage them. Do not provoke your children to anger. To anger alongside or to enrage, Thayer says. It is present, active, imperative, meaning quit doing this. Stop doing this. And do not provoke them to anger or wrath, as your version may say. And it means an action that calls forth anger from you. Look down at verse 26 in the chapter. Chapter 4, verse 26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Your version may have wrath. Again, the wrath that is called forth sometimes by us, it is evinced in someone else. It causes them to be angry. Never let us do that to our children. Understand how important it is. We know this. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And here are some of the ways that we do that with our kids. We can cause them to become angry because we say one thing and we do another. And I'm going to tell you, there's an innate sense of fairness built into little kids. An innate sense of this is right and that is wrong and that comes from God. And I guarantee you, when you promise something as a parent, you better keep it. Because if you think elephants don't forget, children never forget. And if you promise to take them somewhere, or you promise to do this with them, or you promise to be at their ball game, you better know that you need to do it. If comes anything that can, if it was just the death of your closest mom and dad that caused you to have to go somewhere else, we better do that. Secondly, favoritism. Now, in my case, I only had one, so I either like him or I don't. I like him. And I'm going to tell you, if you have more than one, it always can be more than one. And one of them just, you know, you just click with them. You click with them more than you do the other one. The other one's the opposite of you. In temperament, in everything that you can describe, they don't like the same things you like. This other one loves, just like it says of Isaac, do you remember? That he loved to eat the game that Esau brought. So he's drawn toward Esau and the mom, Rebecca's drawn toward Isaac. And favoritism is always going to provoke anger. Correcting always and never praising. You've seen the studies that have been done that it almost takes three praises to debunk one criticism. You see all kinds of it, but it's always more praise. And we're going to get into that tonight when we talk about how we treat our wives, because there's a passage in Scripture where God does that. Where God says a lot of positive things to a particular church before he criticizes them. I guarantee you, and I know this from personal experience, both dealing with my son and my wife and dealing with others, that you will rue that day. You will wish that you had done more of the positive than the negative, because the negative is what is remembered. Not making time for them. I grew up with Harry Chapin's song, Cat in the Cradle, Silver Spoon, Little Boy Blue, Man in the Moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll have a good time then. And the whole song is about what? If Dad didn't have time for him. Uncle Joe, to us, well as uncle, would used to be flying across the United States to different sales meetings had to go, but he would always book a plane if it was just for the overnight. Flew back to Dallas, drove the 2.5 hours down to Mahia to watch his sons play, and then drove back to Dallas, got on a plane, and went back to the city where he had to have a meeting the next day. How many dads do you think do that? I'm not saying necessarily you have to, but what I'm saying is that goes beyond and above, doesn't it? And those boys remember that. That story's come down in the family to make time for them. Inconsistent discipline will cause anger. If we don't do it in fairness and we don't do it with the same consistency, then you're going to create that kind of anger. And then making light of problems that they take very seriously. We need to understand that if they're, where they're maturing may be something we understand a lot more and it's going to pass. But at their stage of the game, it's a very serious thing and we need to take it seriously. All right, he goes on to say it for 4b then. Go back to chapter 6 with me. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. No one is more responsible to bring up your children than you are. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 7 says, you shall teach them diligently the commands of God to your children. Talk of them when you sit in the house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up. Berkeley says, impress them deeply. That's the idea here. It means to pierce. That word that's used there, teach them diligently. Pierce them into them. And understand that when you pierce them, there's two parts to that word in the Hebrew, I understand. To pierce them, meaning to put it into them. But the other part is to repeat. An idea in the ancient times is they had to memorize scripture. And they had to say it again and again and again. So both of those things are true. We're impressing upon them. We're making it a part and a part of their lives. And then remember this. Never forget this. That when you decided to have a child, you and God created another soul. A soul bound for heaven or hell. Every one of your children in this audience, all of them now underage, all of them innocent in God's eyes, are going to go to heaven if they die right now. But if they live long enough, they'll make that choice. And you created that soul. And so a loving husband and wife that totally committed to one another bring a soul into that situation where respect and honor can be taught. Contrast that to someone selfishly having sex for them, their own pleasure, and boom, they create another soul. And now a soul is going to be brought into a relationship that many times the father is out of there. He doesn't care. Or the mother doesn't care. And now the grandparents have to rear this soul. Do you think you'll answer for that? Do you think you'll have to answer for bringing another soul into this world in a way that was not the way God intended? You can be forgiven and you can overcome it, but understand how serious it is. And then finally, he says to discipline. In Proverbs 3, verse 11 and 12, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves. If we don't discipline our kids, we don't love them. If you never say no and mean it, if you never reprove and rebuke bad choices, then you do not, as he says at the end of that verse, the father, the son in whom he delights, you don't delight in your son or your daughter. And folks, no chastening is pleasant. When we have to do the spanking and the talking to them and making them pay the price for their bad decision, none of that's pleasant. But it requires courage and it requires fortitude and it requires determination. It is afterwards, the Hebrew author says, from the moment all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And then not only must we discipline, but he says we must give direction. Your version may say the instruction of the Lord to make them wise for salvation. That how from childhood, he tells Timothy, you know, or knew rather, the Holy Scriptures. Teach them the Bible if you want them to live. Parents, in regard to church here, do you make certain your kids have their Bible lessons done for class? Elders here, do you ask the teachers if this is happening? And teachers, do you speak with the parents if it's occurring on a consistent basis that they don't bring their books and you say, well, that's the elders' job. Try that on Cain. Try that on Cain. Where's your brother? You remember his response. We're responsible. And so if you see things that are inconsistent with a family and you're the teacher in the class, would it behoove you to go to them and say, I'm concerned and I want to ask you something? Or to go with the elders and talk with them? Because folks, if we don't teach them the Bible, they're not going to live. And then finally, you can't teach what you don't know. These words that I command you today shall be in your heart. And then he says, teach them to your children. But it first has to be in our heart. It first has to be our passion. Y'all loving the Hogs right now? Baseball? Basketball, man. They're good. And you know, I see the passion. But do we have it for this? That passion is deep. Does it run with the same burning fever to teach our kids the same way? The faith is passed on from one generation to another. And all of us are responsible. I know that there are those in the audience whose children are not faithful. And I know how painful a lesson like this can be, because I know that if mine chooses one day not to follow God, I would blame myself. I would look at myself. I would think, what did I not do? You have to remember that we're all imperfect and we do the best we can. And at the end of the day, they grow up and they make their own choices. And they will stand and answer as adults. Now, we may have to ask God to forgive us for some. We may know we didn't do what's right, but God can forgive us. But understand, while I'm preaching this, I've got to try to reach the young families. I've got to try to reach the ones who can change it, who can do it the very best they can, to at least make it possible that he can have the best outcome. If you're subject to heaven's invitation today, Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized should be saved. He that believes not should be condemned. Those are his words. That's his way of salvation. And if we can help you this morning, we bid you come as together we stand.